Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. White flight in our region has helped build some communities while depleting others. We'll look at Spanish Lake after white flight in just a couple of moments. But first, as we approach Father's Day, we might all do well to remember that fathers are not always part of the household. When they are not, bad things are all too likely to happen to the children they leave behind. Research is overwhelming that the children will undergo emotional and learning problems. Suicide is a big threat. Violence and delinquency, pregnancy and drug abuse are all too often part of the picture of their lives. And there are 24 million kids living in fatherless homes. A local program, the Father Support Center, has had some impressive success in working with absent fathers who want to remain involved and maintain a relationship with their children. Joining me in studio is Halbert Sullivan, Chief Executive Officer of the Father Support Center. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Barbara Graham, a social worker with the Father Support Center. Halbert, nice to see you again. Thanks for being with us.
Good to see you, Don. Thanks for the opportunity.
You know, I can't get over it. These figures are just absolutely stunning with regard to what happens to young men and young women when the father is absent.
Children need both parents, preferably biological parents, but we do need those roles involved in a child's life. Mothers are nurturers. They're going to make sure you're soothing and fitting well. Fathers will bring some structure and some discipline. And children model the behavior of those parents, which is the reason for those negative outcomes that you just shared. But it's alarming.
I'll just give some figures here. Sometimes figures are difficult to comprehend, but I don't think these will be. Well over 60% of the kids who commit suicide and more than 70% who exhibit behavioral disorders are high school dropouts or who are in juvenile detention centers are from fatherless families.
When one of the parents is missing, the children think it's their fault. And they study hard about that and therefore will become come up with some psychological and emotional concerns. When one parent is missing, children are going to act out. Children need the attention of both parents. Your grades are going to suffer as a result of not being able to engage with both parents. And then that single mom, as great as she may be, she cannot do the dual role of being a father. The young lady needs the love and attention of her father to help her move forward in her own choice of mates. Fathers tell their daughters about how beautiful they are. Fathers buy their daughter the first jewels that they get. And fathers just set the model for what you should look for in a good guy.
So the kinds of numbers that I've been talking about here and that we've been talking about apply to both young men and young women.
Young men and young women. Naturally, when folk are talking, they talk about the impact of a father on a young male. However, that suicide stat did not have any distinction between whether it was a young lady or a young man. The high school dropout rate, no distinction between young lady or young man. But there is one that was very distinctive. 82% of all teenage girls who get pregnant come from fatherless homes. And that, in turn, just keep the cycle going. That's a huge factor.
And society has to pay the price for that.
Society is paying the price in more ways than one. Our children are dumbed down. That's one way that we're paying for it. I never cease to amaze me. You go to McDonald's and a young lady can't give you your change back without the computer. And then our young people who are in juvenile institutions, our young people who are in prison, and our young people who are not staying with children that they create as they move towards young adulthood. So our society is paying a terrible toll.
What, is there a number or a percentage as to why most fathers are absent? Is it divorce? Is that the basic reason?
Divorce is the highest reason. That's the one that we all can point at nowadays because 50% of our marriages wind up in divorce. However, I think the notion of cohabitation is something that our society accepted some time back, and it just hasn't proven to work for both for the children that are involved in those relationships. Why those dads leave, there is some other outside reasons. And these, I don't have any statistical information before me right now, Our social service system is just not conducive to family. We have people in poverty. We've always had people in poverty, and we're very thankful to America that we do have some things in place to try to assist those who are in poverty. However, when you have a system that says to the female that you can receive these services but no man could be in the home, that's a problem, because we are a very generous nation, regardless of what some might say. Our social service system provides some housing, provides medical insurance. The poor has the best medical plan in the country. Cash assistance, you know, energy assistance with utilities. This is the whole deal. But sure, no man can be in the home.
That killed Pruitt-Igoe, didn't it?
Oh, Lord, it killed it.
You know, it's really just thinking back on that, and that particular rule was really the death knell for Pruitt-Igoe. Albert, what is your own story? You have a story to tell.
Well, people always ask me about that. I'm very fortunate. You know, I am a man who follows God. I love the work that I'm doing. My life did not always wasn't always on this path for me. I am a recovering drug addict and an ex-con. I was unfortunate enough to have visited the penal institution on three different occasions. At a very young age, 24 years old, I was given life in prison for selling drugs. But God had another plan for me. After 2.5 years, I was able to come out of prison. But I did not stop doing what I was doing. And in some aspects, I think that God was preparing me for this work, as the religious people would say. But in 1979, I began to use drugs. By 1982, I was a stock-raving drug addict. And in 1993, I was touched by my God, and I went into drug rehab. Rehab worked for me. Today I have 21 years where I have not used beer, wine, or any other drug, clean, free of that monster. Went into rehab in 1993, came out after 30 days, and I went to Forest Park Community College. 1993 and 1995, I got my associates, went to Fontbonne in 95. 1996, I got my bachelor's, went to Wash U in 1996. December of 1997, I got my master's degree from Wash U. And it was at Wash U, doing some research projects at Brown School of Social Work, where we got the idea, concept, notions, and all data related to this father's work that we're currently doing.
Yeah, I want to talk more about the work you're doing, and we'll wait a moment or two until Barbara gets here to continue that. Did you come from a fatherless home?
My home was not truly a fatherless home. I did not come from a dysfunctional family. I came from a good family. I did not know my dad. I saw my father once when I was, maybe twice, when I was about 12 or 13 years old. And I didn't see him again until I was about 54, 55 years old. But I did have a stepfather in the home. It was an on and off situation. He and my mother had a turbulent relationship, but it was mostly on. They were married for about 25 years, okay? And we had a good home. We were poor, very poor. I was born in Memphis, Tennessee, in the 50s and the 60s with segregation. My parents did, like a lot of African Americans did, they migrated to the north, moving us to Rochester, New York. But I had a father figure and a mom in the home. We had rules, we had regulations, we had expectations. We went to church, education, you had to go to school. If I came home and said I didn't have homework, there was going to be trouble to pay the next day. So I didn't come from a dysfunctional home. I made some very poor choices right around the age of 14 or 15.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
My work with fathers was not my first thing to do. As I was at Wash U, I was doing a lot of research, but I was also a school social worker. And my thing was to get involved with youth so that they don't do what I did, that they don't make the choices that I did. But when you go to a school like Wash U, which is a research-based school, you don't want to just learn about it. You want to know how to get to the root cause of different social problems. And when I came across this fatherlessness stuff, that's one of the root causes of a whole host. You just read off all the stats that are here because of fatherlessness. And so my work was to get in front of the things that happen to children. Our work is to impact outcomes for children. That's what we do at the agency.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about how all of that works. You've indicated how it got started in your own particular story. But what is the secret of your success? And you have had success at the support center.
Well, we have one of the most successful fatherhood projects in the nation, and that's just not coming from me. We are involved in research projects where the Department of Health and Human Services is trying to see what brings about that success. Hopefully, they will use that information to replicate across the country.
It's part of a national study.
We're part of a national study.
Right.
And I think what brings about the success is our process. We have a very structured program. We also believe that you can teach an old dog new tricks. We've heard that adjective that you can't, but you can. With my background in social work, I studied Pavlov's theory about behavior modification with his dogs. Mm-hmm. I also studied a theory about it was called the attachment theory. Okay, and so through a behavior modification techniques, you can teach an old dog new tricks. So we have a very structured program. We have a no-nonsense program. Some of the people call our program a boot camp.
Okay. I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. But we also are looking at the true value when it comes to bringing something that the people see as a value. Okay? While we build everything around his involvement with his children, that's what everything is built around. But we also got to look at employment, economics. Economics, economics, economics. If a guy is involved with his child and the ice cream truck comes down the street, he can't get ice cream, everybody else is getting ice cream, he's not going to feel too good. And therefore, he may not come back for another visit because who gives himself pain? So we concentrate also on getting a job, which is why many of them come to us related to a job. The structure. You must be there. We say classes start at 8 o'clock, but you got to be there at 7:45. Our process is a very serious structured process. If you are late two times, then we ask you to come back to another class because you're just not ready for our program. And we cover a wide range. We don't just deal with the employment. We deal with why you're not able to keep a job. We deal with why you're not able to interact with the mother of the child. On our staff today, when I started it, we only had one person. Today we have 44. We have family therapists. So we do some therapeutic methods to help them to begin to change their attitude and their behavior. That's the focus. You get a person a job and they're not ready, they're not going to keep the job. Okay? Why isn't it that the dad doesn't think it's his job to go get the baby in the middle of the night? So we work on those things as well. Then we work on trying to address some other areas. Housing is a huge concern. Substance abuse is by far one of the worst issues to tackle. So we work on working towards getting those things addressed.
How long does this whole process take generally?
Well, when a guy signs on to our program to participate with us, he signs a contract for a year. But the first 6 weeks of that year is the boot camp. For those of us who are familiar with the service, those first 6 weeks are kind of tough. That 6 weeks will start off with 5 days a week from 8 o'clock to 4 o'clock every day. If you miss 2 days, don't come back. That's just the way it is.
How do you find these men? They find you, you find them. How does that work?
It's a mix. We've been around now for about a little over 16 years, so we got a very good reputation in the community. So we'll probably get about 40%, 35-40% of our people will call us. But it's a mix. We also get referrals from probation and parole, family court, child support enforcement sends referrals over to us, and we go on the street corners. We usually take one of our past graduates with us while we go and hand out flyers and talk to the men and just ask them why you're hanging out this corner all day long. How are you doing with your children? And then let the past graduate tell a guy about what he's doing and how he's been successful, and that brings him in as well.
Right. Well, we've got to take a break now. We're talking with Albert Sullivan, the Chief Executive Officer of the Fathers Support Center, and as Father's Day approaches, this is a good subject. We want the fathers to stay with their kids because, as we've indicated in this program, when they don't, bad things tend to happen. Albert Sullivan is with us. We'll be joined in a moment by his colleague, Barbara Graham. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on keeping fathers in the home. You've heard during the first part of this program from Albert Sullivan, who is the Chief Executive Officer of the Fathers Support Center. Joining us in studio now is Barbara Graham, who is a social worker with the Fathers Support Center. Good to have you with us, Barbara.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what you do and how you interact with these men you work with.
Okay. What I do is we assign a social worker to all the men that enroll in our family formation program. Basically, we do assessments with them. We meet with them one-on-one, and then we provide any resources needed, whether it's social service, they need utility assistance, clothing vouchers, food pantries. We provide them with those types of resources.
You know, it sounds to me, on the basis of what Albert has told me and what you've just indicated here, is that we are talking primarily about men who have very, very limited resources. That, and I guess that's part of the reason maybe they're no longer with the family.
That is correct.
Uh-huh. Albert, go ahead.
Now, that guy is the majority of our population, but we work with all dads. We work with some dads who have some very good incomes. Now, there's only certain aspects of the program that he might be able to participate in, but if he's calling and he wants to get connected to his child, we have a way to help him get connected as well.
Barbara, what is the biggest challenge that you face and that they face in trying to reestablish this contact?
One of the biggest challenges I notice with the dads is trying to reconnect with the children, but the mothers are hesitant or resistant. So working on those relationships with the moms.
Yeah, that would seem to me that it's just would have to be built that way, that mothers would be resistant.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you do? How do you bridge that gap?
Well, we have bonding activities that we schedule for the men. And we also ask the dads if we can contact the mother to try to persuade her to let us get the child for a few hours. We just had the circus floor event and we were able to contact some moms and let them know Father Support Center is sponsoring this event. Are you able to let, you know, your son or your daughter attend? And usually after about 15 or 20 minutes of persuasion, they will allow them to pick up that child.
In addition, we have also had situations where the moms have also participated in the bonding activities as well.
Yes.
Are there any occasions where the man and the woman get together again and try to make a go of it?
Yes. We've had those happen, and even marriage has came out of those.
That's the exception rather than the rule, though.
Yes.
Oh, definitely the exception, but we are very proud that we have had fathers, after coming through our program, to marry the mother of their children. That's my goal. I'm married, and everybody need to enjoy that.
I think you can be fairly tough on these men if you have to be. How long does it typically take for the father to actually get together for the first time with their kids?
It's case-by-case scenarios. It may vary just depending on the relationship. We try to baby step them into, you know, contacting the mom via phone or maybe trying to send a letter or either intervening with staff. Like I said, the social workers are able to contact the mothers to try to let them know what the program is about, the progress the client is making. And then that kind of gives them some comfort, and we go from there.
But it does take a little time.
Yes.
I'm sure there's some apprehension on the part of the fathers, particularly if they've been away for a long time.
Yes.
Go ahead, Albert.
I want to be very careful here because while there is apprehension, our moms are not bad people, and I don't want to paint a picture of that. It's just that some of our guys have not been involved. Not only have they not been involved emotionally, their finances have not been there either. And once the mother learns that he is on a positive track, we have some very good success afterwards. These mothers are some wonderful moms. But if you're not there, why should I bring a stranger into my child's life?
And I would also suspect that there is some guilt on the part of the father in reestablishing with the kids, that that's difficult for both parties in that case.
Yes, that's correct.
And how do you get around that, Barbara?
Again, we just try to encourage them and motivate them and then just promote the positiveness that they're, you know, have came thus far. They're even enrolled in the class. They've attended on time. They've done everything we've asked them to do. So we just keep letting them know, good work, keep it up, and let's, you know, move forward.
And we also expose these fathers to the same stress that you have. So the guy can see himself being a difference in his child's life. See himself being a difference in his child having an opportunity to graduate from high school, or his child having an opportunity to avoid a juvenile detention or avoid drug use. Fathers love their children. They love their children, so they too want the best. Once they learn that their interaction with the child, it don't move it, or it don't take it away, but it moves away some of the guilt and allow them to move forward.
Do you have something such as a dropout rate of men who get involved with your program and then decide, well, maybe it's not for me?
Our dropout rate is really, really low. Most of our men are able to withstand the 6 weeks, so we give them a lot of tools and a lot of techniques that they can be able to go out into the world, obtain employment, housing, and just have that impact on their children where they're involved financially and emotionally.
But there is a dropout rate.
Yes.
Because if you miss 2 days, you don't have to drop out. You'll be put out.
Yeah. Okay? So that's a kick out rate.
Yeah.
I think
well. But we have a pretty good rate because over the years, last year, we had about 265 fathers to complete our program. We got 183 of those guys a job. And so that's one of the number one things that they want to come to see about. We also have been working with child support enforcement for about 16, 17 years. And so when you have a child support issue, we oftentimes can get you something going on. We can't make it go away.
Yeah.
Don't misunderstand, it's not going to go away. However, let's get a little leeway so I can really afford to pay it.
Over the years, how long have you been in business at the center?
A little over 16 years, coming
years.
Up on our 17th year.
How many have graduated over that period of time?
Wow.
Do you
know? We've worked with over 12,000 fathers over the last 16 and a half years.
12,000.
In this area. Yeah, over 12,000.
Boy, when you think of, you know, of, again, going back to those awful numbers that I mentioned at the beginning and thinking that 12,000 fathers are back with kids, perhaps keeping them away from some of those statistics.
That term deadbeat is one of my main reasons. Our guys are not deadbeat. They're dead broke.
Yeah.
The average guy in this low-income population will probably make anywhere from $17,000 to, say, $14,000 a year. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to pay child support, pay for your own living, and if you have a current situation where you're involved with somebody, very difficult to do that with about $14,000 a year.
Sure. Or to support a family. If you stay with the family, it's
very difficult. So they'll move themselves so she can get that housing, that groceries, food stamps, that wonderful medical plan that we all need. So if he moves himself out, she can get that.
We don't have an awful lot of time left, but I know you're having an event tomorrow in which you're going to honor the Father of the Year. And Barbara, I know you've worked with this gentleman. Tell us briefly, if you would, what his story is.
Okay.
Who is he?
So Marvin Davis was selected to be our Father of the Year for 2014. He has a 9-year-old son, Markel. Marvin Davis, he came to our program looking to better his relationship with his child. He recently got custody of his child. He's been working.
Is that a rare situation? He has sole custody?
Yes.
Yes,
okay.
That's rare.
Very rare.
Okay.
So he has custody of his son. He's had stable employment for the past few years. He's obtained housing. So he exemplifies what a father can be.
Highly motivated, obviously, to
yes.
Come back and to take on all of these responsibilities.
Yes.
And what does being Father of the Year entail? Does he get a gold watch or something like that?
Well, he's going to get several gifts from the organization, but he will also get a chance to throw out the first pitch the Monday after Father's Day at the Cardinals game, okay? And he will receive the accolades from his community, such as today. We wanted him to be with us today. He was offered to be on Channel 11. Channel 2 will carry some stuff. We may get a chance to get on Channel 4. So he will receive accolades from his community. And as I said, the agency will give him several gifts.
And perhaps the most important part is with all of the publicity that he will get, that will spill over into what you're doing, and that'll perhaps encourage more men to get involved in the project.
Exactly. But the gold ring is that he stays involved with his child's life. That's the gold ring for the whole situation. And I do need to make this commercial before I leave off. We will have our largest fundraiser of the year, and we do need community support donations. That fundraiser is called our annual Father of the Year Awards Dinner. It will be tomorrow, Thursday, be held at Windows on Washington. Donations, donations, donations.
You have a website, and we will put a link to that website on ours at sdlpublicradio.org so that people who want to become involved can do so that way. I want to thank you both so much for being with us, and congratulations on all that you've done, Albert and Barbara, and all that you will do. I know it's going to be even more significant. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Don. Thank
you. We've been talking with Albert Sullivan, Chief Executive Officer of the Father Support Center, and Barbara Graham, who is a social worker with the center. Again, thank you so much for being with us. Coming up, we're going to be talking about white flight and how it affected the community of Spanish Lake. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.